Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sally Elcordi, and welcome to Public Advocate. Today, my guests are Candace Astave and Travis Middleton. We are going to be talking about legal issues, legal actions against mandated vaccines, and I'm going to pick up my guests right now. Hold on just a minute, please, while I do. Hello, this is Sally. Who is this?
Hi, Sally. It's Candace Astave.
Oh, hi, Candace. Well, I would like you to set the premise for this show since, you know, it kind of evolved from a conversation that we were having, and then I will invite Travis onto the program.
Okay, let me just start with me. I am an activist. My child was vaccine injured. I started heading up with a group of people, the Twitter campaign for the CDC whistleblower, William Thompson, and we created a library of resources at b1less.com. So we have all kinds of resources, and we're doing a campaign to get everybody to Sacramento this summer, and you can find that at summerinsacramento.com. And we're going to be babysitting our lawmakers. So right now we're on Twitter, we're bugging Jason Chaffetz, and he's the congressman in Utah who's the chair of the Oversight Committee for Malfeasance in Government. So we're calling him and asking him to bring the CDC whistleblower in front of them, subpoena William Thompson. And Jason's office phone number is area code 202-225-7751. So today we've asked Travis Middleton to come and talk about what kind of action we're going to take regarding the, you know, mandates that are sweeping our country. So
right, and you are both from California, so he's going to start at least by speaking about California, and then towards the end of the show we will get we'll talk about other actions for other states. Certainly so much is going down right now. Go ahead. Would you like to introduce Travis?
Sure. Hi, Travis.
Hold on, dear. He's not on yet. But
okay.
Travis,
Travis is a legal researcher, and we met at a viewing of BOT. And that, by the way, is a great way to get community outreach and get people in the know about what's going on. And we had partnered with a bunch of GMO labeling people that drew a huge crowd to that movie. It was standing room only, and that's when Travis got up and said, you know, let's sue them. So I'm Travis's girl. I'm helping him. I'm connecting him with people I know. So we're on a team.
So welcome, Travis.
Travis, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Hi, Candace, and hi, Sally, again.
Hi there.
My name is Travis Middleton. Can you hear me okay?
Yes,
okay. I'm an independent paralegal and a legal researcher, and I have been studying constitutional and criminal law under an attorney by the name of Michael H. Brown. Michael Brown is an attorney certified to practice in two states, Illinois and Minnesota. He's been practicing throughout the courts of the country up to the Supreme Court for the last 40 years. And I've been one of his students as well for the last 15 years. And I really got involved in the court system in a heavier way about 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago. Recently was involved in a lot of foreclosure issues here in California, advising homeowners and some attorneys what arguments to raise against the banks. So I'm aware and competent in civil and criminal law and constitutional and federal law. So when I heard about this vaccine thing going on, I was speaking to my ex-wife, and I kept referring to her. There's a way around this issue. And for me, I was taught no matter what goes on against public policy, you have rights and remedies. However, whether there's a waivable claim or right at stake, if you fail to assert or invoke your right timely, it could be waived. You don't have any guaranteed rights in this country. All you have is the ability to put words on paper to move an action in court, and that's it, okay? So that being said, I got up in front of this group at the Faulkner Library and made a statement to them about how to pull the right switch. The people who've gone to Sacramento and opposed this bill have done a great job of getting in the politicians' faces and voicing their opposition. However, they haven't rung the right bell yet to get their attention. The politicians do not respond to the average person. We don't contribute to their campaigns in a significant way. We don't have enough millions. So they, and I hate to say this, but they really respond to the wealthy and the ones who feed them. So you have to attack them at the lifeblood source. And one of the ways to do that very effectively is you have to get them where they live. And what people forget about politicians, they swore an oath of office to uphold and defend their state and federal constitutions of all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And I submit to you there are a lot of domestic enemies running loose throughout America, like drug companies. More importantly, you have to put these politicians in a position where they think, oh, my career may be on the line. So here is one of my suggestions of what we should all be doing now. I've constructed a constructive and legal notice of breach of their oath of office that I will send to each politician. In this document, it gives them legal notice that, one, they have an oath of office, and two, they're obligated to follow that oath, and three, this bill, SB 277, is wholly on its face unconstitutional because it violates citizens' First Amendment right, their Fourth Amendment right of privacy, their Fifth Amendment right, the right not to be assaulted or killed without due process, their Tenth Amendment right, and their 14th Amendment rights. These are the rights that are going to be imperiled by this bill. These politicians know this, but no one has stood in front of a politician yet to say, excuse me, Mr. Senator or Representative, I believe you swore an oath of office, correct? Where in your oath does it give you the authority to violate your oath? Secondly, where in your oath does it give you the specific authority to violate the citizens' rights under the First, Fourth, Fifth, Tenth, and Fourteenth Amendments? You have no such authority, and you're charged with a higher knowledge of law. And due to that charge of higher knowledge of law, we're going to hold you accountable to your oath and your office and your public duty. What you're doing constitutes a Hobbs Act violation under racketeering. So this is where this is going to be going. And if you like your job, then you might want to not support this bill because we're going to pursue you in a multi-plaintiff suit under the Hobbs Act and some other violations. And the Hobbs Act violation includes murder, assault, attempted murder, assault with intent to do bodily harm. It includes charges like money laundering and extortion and all those kinds of things. It is a perfect vehicle to pull down this cabal known as these drug companies who are going to use the politicians as a means to increase their bottom dollar, basically, at the expense of maiming and killing people. And one of the things I said to the public was, if you argue that studies are deemed safe and effective or which studies are incorrect or invalid, they will work you all day long on that issue. They'll just say, well, I have an expert that says one thing, you got one that says another, and they will somehow discredit your expert. One of the things they cannot get away from is the fact that they've sworn an oath of office. They are charged with a high knowledge of law. No matter what the issue is in their office about what bill they're going to support and put out there, they are forbidden to violate their oath to support and defend their state and federal constitutions. You can start right there, and that's the right bell to ring. And that'll get their – and they do have a liability. So that's the song we should be singing right now across America and across California. And I'm thankful, and I implore the people who are – out there creating flyers, educating the public, educating the school systems, and educating the politicians. Believe me, they already know these things about the harmful side effects of these drugs. and look at it from this perspective. When you consider a compound that has formaldehyde, which is highly toxic, mercury, highly toxic, acetones and animal proteins and aluminum, everyone knows, you don't have to be a PhD in chemicals to understand these compounds will do severe effects on your health. So I see it as an assault on my child or myself should an official want to inject my child full of these kinds of compounds. I'm not going to let that happen. So one of the ways to do that is we need to make it personal to the individual you're facing because they are trying to program on you. You need to let them know they're going to incur a personal liability when it comes to them trying to force feed you these compounds. You know, and I'm not saying or opposing the vaccination as a whole. I'm supporting that people have a right to choose a medical procedure. So my stake in the game is I have three children, and one's a 14-year-old. They're all not vaccinated, and they're all very healthy. Well, if this bill gets passed, I'm going to be faced with the task of letting some politician and public official understand just where their liability extends would be personally. And I'm going to sue the official. I'm going to sue their spouse. I'm going to sue all their constituents. I'm going to wreak judicial havoc on them in a federal court on this issue. I'm going to make it personal. And I advise everyone else to also see it that way and make it personal. The effect of a politician having hundreds or thousands of pieces of mail come in his office, challenge him through his oath of office that you violated your oath and your duty to the public, and we're going to sue you under the Hobbs Act if you support this bill, that will get his attention. I promise you that'll get his attention. Now,
May I ask a question? Is poisoning people legal?
I'm sorry, I missed the question. Say it again, please.
Is poisoning people legal?
No, it's not.
Well, these are 100% poisons. So
yes, I understand that, which is why I chose not to vaccinate my children.
Right, but if it's illegal to poison people, how can they even offer poison to people?
Well, let me respond by telling you this. Again, where there's a waivable claim or right at stake, and if one fails to assert the claim or the right timely, it could be deemed waived. The Supreme Court has ruled that every citizen has a duty to know his own country's laws. Now, it's an uphill mountain to climb because, one, unless you go to law school and start practicing law and do what I've done in the law library and been mentored into the system, you don't know your rights. You don't know what's called a lawful timing of when you should assert a right and say no, okay? But no one's telling you that. So it's never legal to poison anyone. The issue is, and I'll give you an example of this. My kids were younger in their ages of preschool, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old. A couple of occasions on their visit, the physician asked about immunizations, and I kindly said to him, we believe in natural immunity. We're not going to be doing that program. So when he got into, 8, 9, 10 years old, he brought it up again. So I decided to shut him down once and for all. And this is how I handled it. I said, doctor, is it your professional opinion that you recommend that I vaccinate my children? He goes, yes. I said, is that your medical opinion? He goes, yes. It's a good idea for the public safety. I said, fine. Next question. Should they have a severe side effect that makes them debilitated mentally and or physically or even kill them? Can I hold you and your license in jeopardy for malpractice and professional negligence? He goes, oh, wait a minute. I said, no, you wait a minute. You just stated to me that you give your medical recommendation that they be vaccinated, and I propose that you be doing the vaccinating, okay? The other thing is this. Should you tell me that, if I was an average person, I might consider that your advice being regular, good, conscious advice. I'm a medical doctor. But I know better because the things in those compounds like mercury, formaldehyde, and acetones are going to be harmful to my kids. And they may have side effect. So on that basis, if you tell me that you recommend this, I am going to hold your license in jeopardy should it have a severe side effect. Now, let's have this conversation again. Given the fact that you now know that I'm aware of what's in these compounds, and given the fact that you know I will hold you accountable for damage to my child, do you still recommend that I vaccinate my children, and are you going to be the one to do this? He goes, well, you know, they're healthy, so you don't have to vaccinate them. I said, fine. And so this discussion is over, correct? He goes, yes. And that was the last ever discussion that he ever brought to me about my kid's vaccination. I made it personal to him. I didn't discuss the validity of what studies said the vaccines were harmful or what weren't. I don't care about those studies because he can always dispute that. That's not my expertise. My expertise is law and my liberty. And so that's where I put it. And that ended the discussion. So I invoked my right in front of him that you're not going to touch my children or I would consider it an assault. And so that's how I handled that. So here, if you were to tell a school principal and a school nurse, I'm going to hold you accountable for an assault with intent to do bodily harm, including murder, I'm going to sue you personally and your spouse if you harm my child with this needle, they're going to think about it.
Absolutely. I would be thinking about it.
Yeah.
And what about legislators? Can you say the same thing to legislators?
I'm sorry, was there a question there?
Can you say the same thing to legislators?
Yes, I recommend it. As a matter of fact, that's just what my notice does. It puts them on notice. They're going to be a defendant in a Hobbs Act violation for attempted murder and assault and mayhem and racketeering.
Well, I have to say, can't we just say to them, poison is illegal and these are known poisons? So you are breaking the law?
That's also stated in my notice, that they're poisonous.
Sally, I just want to say that there were more than 1,000 of us when it went to the Health Committee in Senate at the Capitol building, and we had gone to speak with our legislators personally. I did, and hundreds of other parents did, maybe even thousands, and gave them packets full of information on vaccine ingredients and package inserts and the studies that say that aluminum is dangerous. So they're perfectly aware that they're perfectly aware of VAERS data. They know that children are injured, and our Supreme Court said that vaccines are unavoidably unsafe.
Stop right there. Well, then they are the ones who the Supreme Court has said they are allowed to be poisoned.
No. I'm sorry. The Supreme Court says that they're poisonous and not safe, but they didn't say that it was legal. So you have to raise the right question to the judges.
Well, it's an important
You have to raise the right argument.
Okay. I don't mean to be throwing this argument off track, but it is such a basic element here that, as you say, we've all educated our legislators, but now it's time to say, and it's illegal to offer poison. If it's illegal to poison, it's illegal to offer poison. Is it not?
Well, yes. Let me ask you this. Who have ever raised that question to a public official or in one of these inquiries?
Who has ever raised which question?
About the issue of these compounds being poisonous, not about the studies, but about those particular ones we just mentioned being poisonous and neurotoxins. Has anyone ever just point blank said, hey, these are poisonous?
Yes, and I do, every single time I meet with a legislator.
And
that's
how do they
what
respond
I say.
To you?
They give me a blank look, but how dare
they? Yeah, they don't respond. They don't respond to us.
I said, would you like to drink it? If you don't want to drink it, why are you recommending it be injected into children? There's a really basic issue that if we focus on it, we can't help but win. And that is, if poison is illegal, how dare you even offer it?
That's the first stage of ringing the right bell. The next stage is letting them know that they have a liability for pushing this violation upon the populace. No one's done that yet.
So, Travis, to take action right now, we can take the letter that you drew up that I have access to and I shared with Sally, and we would put that in a certified letter along with a vaccine ingredients list, some package inserts maybe, even the complaint that Jim Moody, Brian Hooker, and Andrew Wakefield, the complaint that they filed with the Office of Research Integrity, along with Dr. William Thompson's press release, the CDC whistleblower, his confession to hiding data, manipulating data. So we would put all that in an envelope and send it to each of our legislators, certified mail.
Yes, you could do it that way. But I'm recommending that you only reference those documents and those issues with the case number or whatever. And they can find it. They have experts on their side. They have committees to get this stuff. They have easy access to it. So the bigger issue is, and that's an important fact, and that's lawsuit stuff. But the bigger issue is so that you're not overburdened. My notice is a 6-page document. And if you attach all those other documents with it, it becomes probably a 30-page document. Okay? Those other documents and addendums aren't needed for the effectiveness of my document.
Okay.
Okay? It's not needed. It would be needed in a civil suit in court, but not needed for the notice. The notice goes right to the heart of the problem, and it starts off like this. Constructive and legal notice of breach of your oath of office. And it makes the question, where in your oath of office does it give you the authority to violate your oath to protect and defend the California and United States constitutions? Where in your oath does it give you the authority to violate the people's rights under the 1st, 4th, 5th, 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution? And then it says, issued to Senator Hannah Beth Jackson and all those other senators and representatives. Okay? And it goes from the thousands of people living in Santa Barbara County and throughout California who opposes Bill SB 277 or any other similar bill or ordinance that is repugnant to the California and United States Constitutions. And then it goes on to talk about what it is called insurrection, as defined as instance of an open resistance to the established authority. What they're involved in when they're breach of oath is called insurrection to the superior authority called the Constitutions. And they know that. But no one has told them until now. And for that, there's a violation and a remedy for insurrection. Okay? An insurrection on that level is a direct Hobbs Act violation. And they're not immune from the Hobbs Act. The only person that's immune from the Hobbs Act violation is the president. And we're not going after him. Senators are totally liable for what they're doing. So all this is explained in the notice you've read. That's all you would have to have for now.
Okay. And so we could get people all across the country to send certified letter to each of our California legislators, people from all across the country, to bombard their offices with this mail.
All across California, all across the country. And they can also send the same notice to their own representatives in their own states. And it's just
effective. So they don't have to modify it per state.
No. Just change the name of a guilty and send it.
So they can access that. I'll try to get it out to everybody. Sally, do you have any suggestion on how people can access that might be listening that isn't on social media or?
Oh, I see. Access, well, what I was saying is we may put additional information in the comment area beneath the screen. However, is there a website that you have?
I do not at this time. Well, we could go to B1Less. We could try to get it there, B1Less.com.
Okay. All right. So then send everyone to B1Less.com for the
information.
That's
the letter B, the numeral 1, LESS.com.
Right. Okay.
Yes,
well, that's good.
And a similar one could be sent, a similar notice could be sent to the school board and the individual schools your children go to about this, that addresses the same issue.
Because we are being threatened to not be able to attend school unless the seventh grade, at least. This is my personal experience. the health tech got up and told an assembly full of sixth graders going into the seventh grade for orientation. She told that whole bunch of kids that they would be turned away the first day of school if they didn't have their Tdap vaccine that's mandated for seventh grade to even walk in the door, and she followed it up with, that's the law. And, of course, I had to throw in my 2 cents worth.
It was good for you. But he was.
Well, what did you say? When she said that's the law, what did you say?
Well, I raised my hand so I could say it publicly in front of everybody, and she wouldn't call on me. So then after she was finished with her speech, she came up to me, and I told her that it's the school district's responsibility to inform parents of their rights. That's in the state of California, and I'm familiar with special education law, so that is part of the process of having parents be fully involved in the process, their children's educational process. Typically they need to give everybody a student handbook with the regulations and rules. So, but they always give just one side of the story. They don't tell you, you know, that you're entitled to an exemption in the state
right.
of California.
We know that
the county health departments are responsible for promoting, and, you know, I'm pretty sure our school nurse works for the county health department, and they're just, they are hired by the school district to come in. They have a contract.
And here's the thing.
Well, I know if you get an exemption here, one nurse told someone who got an exemption, if you tell anyone else you got it, it will be retracted.
Yeah, really? See, they're strong-arming us.
Well, here's the thing, guys. I've heard of doctors strong-arming parents, young parents, about immunizations. But mine didn't strong-arm me. You know why? I was armed with the right information. Exactly. I made it personal to his career, and then he backed down.
Is it informed consent? Is the doctor must he give informed consent?
I couldn't hear your question.
Consent? Because
I could not
hear
your question.
Who did all the informing, he did not inform you of anything.
Well, again, and you're correct. I had already done my research 20 years ago about this issue. So I'm hearing it all over again. So it's not news to me, okay? So I'm now, because I have a lot of court experience in moving cases to the state and federal court system, I know how to make good on my threat to make them liable in court. So the thing is, if I'm in front of a school board member or a superintendent or a nurse, I'm just going to tell them. I don't care what you think the law is. The United States Constitution is still the supreme law of this land. If you didn't know that or forgotten it, I'll teach it to you in court one day. But you're not going to assault my child in any way or respect with a needle, because if you do, you're going to be a defendant, your spouse will be a defendant, the school board will be a defendant, and everyone I can get my hands on is going to be a defendant.
Willful misconduct. Where does that play into this?
I'm sorry, what was the question? I couldn't hear you.
That's okay. Willful misconduct. With respect to the issue of people informing legislators, the ingredients, for example, and they're proceeding to try to write and pass bills that they have been warned against, wouldn't that be willful misconduct?
It is willful misconduct. Okay, but here's the thing. Now, from what I understand, there is legal proceedings going on in the vaccine court up in New York, and to some degree, the courts have given these drug companies a pass from being sued and decreased their liability under the tort claims laws. Okay, for assault and tort claims laws. Now, the civil rights statute still exists, but a more powerful weapon is racketeering in the Hobbs Act, okay? So the activity that they're doing, including the doctors and the legislatures, fit the modality of the liability under the Hobbs Act. So, yes, it's misconduct, but in which claim are you going to use in court is the question. I'm recommending RICO because under conspiracy under 18 U.S.C. 1961, all that is required to make them guilty is that you mention them and that they were involved in a conspiracy to assault and maim and murder children. Well, guess what?
Or a conspiracy to force us to purchase a product. That's RICO.
That's true, too. But on the conspiracy charge, the only way they can be found not guilty is that they have evidence, clear convincing evidence, that they were not involved in the conspiracy to assault and maim individuals. But when you look at the ingredient list and what they're doing, it fits the modality of a conspiracy. So they can't just come into court and say, no, I wasn't involved, or I had no idea what I was doing was unlawful, or I didn't know that my co-author had an affiliate that was getting paid and funneling money to him. All those are not excuses. You see, the Hobbs Act is written to bust down and break down those racketeering elements. People who come into court and say, well, I didn't know, I wasn't aware, I wasn't there, it was him, not me, that won't fly in this case.
There's also another issue, and that is everybody who has gone on Pam's page to educate him has been locked out. So not only that, one woman who's only put up trade papers of the medical industry, the CDC's information, all of the, you know, and even though she stuck to just that kind of information, she was locked out too, to the point where you'd have to say, is he anti-science?
So let me address that issue. Have you ever heard the saying that ignorance of the law is no excuse?
Yes.
Okay. It applies to the politicians as well under racketeering. So if they had no information about the other studies that they're not taking into account, or they had no information of what they were doing was sometimes harmful to the public, it's not an excuse to be guilty of a Hobbs Act violation. So, and I think, if I may add,
I have all that information. I can send it to you. The things that were posted to his page that someone who had posted them was blocked. I don't know if the articles were
deleted. I was blocked, too. I got pictures.
Well, hang on, ladies. Well, hang on a second. What I'm telling you is this. With respect to whether they knew or didn't have access to the information is irrelevant to their guilt in court on this issue. I don't care what they knew before the fact. It's not a defense to make them guilty and get a damage out of them. It's their liability. They are charged with a higher knowledge of law because they're politicians and have access to top legal counsel and all these committees. Okay, they have no excuse. So the time for trying to educate them is long over. The time now is to put them on notice that they're going to be a defendant in a Hobbs Act violation. That's where we're at.
Okay, fair enough.
Travis, I have another question for you, and I'd like your perspective. I read... an attorney had posted it, that if we can prove vaccines are not safe or effective, we can sue pharmaceutical companies. Now, what is your perspective on that? Is that true?
That's true. Yes, that is true. But now it depends upon which lever you pull to bring them down. In other words, which cause of action you're going to use, a civil rights statute, antitrust law, racketeering law. Which one?
All of them. That's the critical issue right there. As many as possible.
Well, you want to make sure that that the crime fits the remedy of which one you're seeking. So, given what you're alleging in the complaint, but he's correct. You can sue the drug manufacturer. And if I were going to do this kind of a case with the drug manufacturer, I'd get him under RICO and the Hobbs Act. It's the best way to bring them down.
So one more thing, Travis. So we send our letter, and they have, 5 or 10 days to respond to us. Now, if they don't respond to us, we contact you and we move forward in litigation?
Yes, correct.
Perfect. So we'll need your contact information as well.
Right. Now, keep this
so
in
we'll
mind.
So we'll post that on the show, right, Sally? Or on
B1Less? Well, you can post it on the B1Less website as well. Keep everything in
okay,
one place.
Perfect.
And I'll put that link, yeah.
Okay. So there was another thing called the willful blindness doctrine. So they're all perfectly aware, and they used it a lot in drug dealer cases. And I guess it's expanded for other criminal acts like this.
Can you give me a short summation of the doctrine?
Yeah, it says willful blindness, also known as conscious avoidance, is a judicially made doctrine that expands the definition of knowledge to include closing one's eyes to the high probability a fact exists, in this case, kids are injured, while the doctrine originated in the context of drug trafficking cases, it has since been expanded to a wide array of prosecutions and is increasingly used in the white-collar cases, consistently benefiting the persecution. A request to instruct the jury on willful blindness usually comes on the heels of weak evidence of knowledge without any advance warning to the defense and invites the jury to convict based on evidence of mere negligence or recklessness.
That sounds like a conspiracy under 18 U.S.C. 1961 of the racketeering statute.
All right.
And just expand it, okay?
Great.
So that's fine. That's perfect.
Now, we don't have a lot more time, but there's one thing I just want to touch on, Travis. Are you familiar with the federal resolution 1117 that our government is going to try to make states mandate vaccines or getting rid of all the exemptions?
No,
how does that work, Sally?
Okay. What they did in on the Hill, on Capitol Hill, is created a resolution, H.R. 117, and that basically extols vaccines and their benefit to America. And it is all the lies we've been told for decades. Okay? It's just regurgitated fallacies. However, Frederica Wilson, representative from Florida, has created a bill called H.R. 2232, and this basically states, and by the way, her senior advisor is from GlaxoSmithKline. However, it states that if the states do not remove exemptions, then they will be penalized financially by the federal government. They will withhold funding.
Okay. Can I address that?
Sure.
May I?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. First of all, the federal government doesn't have the authority to make the states do that under the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Okay? They don't have the authority to do that. Question is, does the AG of the state understand that 10th Amendment provision to back the federal government off? Okay? And the reason why that's there is because the federal government's out of control sometimes when it comes to trying to legislate state law and make the states do what they want them to do when it comes to violating citizens' rights and even the states' rights. States have authority over the federal government in that respect, okay, in that respect. But they got to use the 10th Amendment to get that done. So the federal government can make a joint resolution all they want to. It still won't overcome the 10th Amendment. That is supreme law of the land as well, and that needs to be argued in that case. And I'm sure there's some pretty brilliant attorneys in this land that understands that piece and knows how to get that done.
Okay, well, the resolution is just a statement of the glory of vaccines, and the bill is a threat. It's like blackmail.
Yes, it is. You can't do
that.
So
they could take away, like, funding, educational funding or something like
that,
right?
Let me put it this way.
Well,
if you go to the federal government and ask for one of their benefit packages of funding, they're going to say, well, you're obligated to adhere to these requirements. And you're going to be obligated if you want the funding. If you don't want to be obligated to the requirements, then do not accept the funding. That's where you're at. So
right.
there's no lawful need to take the funding. You can raise funds in your state other ways to get the job done. It depends on how lazy the state is. But if they take the federal funding, you will have to follow the federal mandate or get penalized for not doing so. But it's not a requirement to follow that mandate if you're not taking funding.
Well, there are 100 sponsors on the resolution extolling the glories. There is no co-sponsor on the bill to penalize states that don't go along. However, it is already in the Commerce Committee. That's just a fact.
Okay.
Whatever.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway.
Again, there's a way around that one, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure Jason Chavitz is in that committee, Fred Upton, some of these guys that are on the Oversight Committee, they're on that congressional committee.
And see, those senators in Congress have also forgotten their oath of office, and they, too, are just as liable for their conduct for breach of their oath.
Well, I want to thank you very much for coming on this program. You have certainly enlightened me, and I'm sure Candace, and certainly the audience as well. So I appreciate your coming on and being as clear as a bell. Candace, would you like to say a few words in closing? Candace Estave, and thank you very much, Travis Middleton. Go to beoneless.com. for more information on this program. And I'll turn it over to you, Candace. You have about 3 minutes.
Okay. So we're working to get our CDC whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson, to be subpoenaed in front of Congress for the malfeasance and fraud at the CDC. So we are calling the office of Jason Chavitz, who is the chair of the Oversight Committee, and we'd like a congressional hearing. We can call his office at area code 202-225-7751. Also, for anything current or daily stuff on these issues particularly, you can follow me on Twitter at CESTAVE, that's CEESTAVE, or you can search hashtag CDC whistleblower, and you can get all kinds of information. So we're not going to let these lawmakers bowl us over and show up at our door and force our children to be vaccinated. So we really have to take a stand and get in there and go.
And for the listeners, so you realize there is a forced adult vaccination on the horizon. They intend, because of the Healthy People 2020 plan drawn up in the 80s, to fully vaccinate everybody by the year 2020. So doing nothing is the worst thing you could possibly do. Please visit the letter B, the number one, less.com with regard to actions you can take right away.
Yes, and they can go to tinyurl.com/healthypeople2020, and they can read all about that Healthy People 2020 that they've been working on for 30 years.
Thank you. Wonderful. That's a resource.
tinyurl.com/healthypeople2020.
Okay, I'm going to leave you with one more link that they won't let me post anywhere, and it's my legislation to Congress for a vaccine-free 2015, and that's tinyurl.com/vaccine-free2015. Well,
excellent.
Thank you very much, Candace Estave, and your friend has dropped from the radio program. I don't know, willfully, you know, perhaps they just dropped it. But Travis Middleton, this has been so illuminating. So cheers for now, and I look forward to working with everybody out there. We're having an event on June 20th and 21st, Global Solidarity to Reject Vaccine Tyranny. Cheers.